Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Wednesday morning. It's May 13th. 61 degrees here in Old Town Park City. 57 degrees at the Heber Valley Airport. And on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, it's meteorologist Cedric Haynes. Good morning.
Happy Wednesday, KPCW listeners. It's time for your forecast for the Wasatch back on this Wednesday. We do have some interesting weather heading our way today. It's still going to be fairly warm as we go throughout the day with a gusty southwesterly wind picking up. Those winds could gust up to 30 to 40 miles per hour at times this afternoon. High temperatures in Park City will climb into the upper 70s to near 80. We'll climb into the low 80s in the Heber Valley. Again, look for a few extra clouds popping up and a chance of some isolated thunderstorms developing as we get into this afternoon and evening. A couple of those storms could be on the strong to severe side, primarily with some microburst winds. Those are winds that literally fall from the thunderstorm as it falls apart. So basically not a lot of rain, but we could see those wind gusts that spread out up to 60 to 70 miles per hour. And we could see some lightning out there along with a little small hail. So would not be surprised to see a severe thunderstorm warning or two issued later today. So keep an eye to the sky and on the radar as we go throughout the rest of your Wednesday afternoon. Otherwise, that front will bring us some cooler conditions heading into your Thursday, brings back the sunshine as well. Highs will only be in the mid-60s in Park City on your Thursday, with high temperatures in the low 70s in the Heber Valley. As we move into your Friday, we'll see lots of sunshine. Temperatures will climb into the low 70s in Park City. We'll see those highs rebounding back to near 80 in the Heber Valley. Now, we are going to be going into the weekend with another cold front moving our way. Saturday, look for mostly sunny to partly sunny skies, windy conditions. We'll see those highs in the upper 60s in Park City, highs in the mid-70s in the Heber Valley. Behind that cold front, we will have a chance of a couple of spotty showers that will show up on your Sunday with partly cloudy skies, but much cooler temperatures, only in the low 50s at best for highs in Park City, with highs only around 60 in the Heber Valley. And we'll keep it chilly as we head into early next week, with morning lows potentially back below freezing in the 20s as we head into Monday and Tuesday of next week. Let's look at your latest forecast for the Wasatch back on ABC 4 meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
Stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, a conversation with Park City Senior Center Director Trayson Dixon, along with Park City High School student Rachel Riff, telling us about the first intergenerational book club. Later on, Deer Valley's Lift Operations Field Manager Jeff Marska has details on a lift conference that's being held here in Utah, the first time that Utah has hosted it. And later on, Heber Valley Chamber Executive Director Dellen Kosher with a recap of the Wasatch Back Economic Summit, along with some of the upcoming events. Then stay tuned for the mountain life, in a world obsessed with answers. Author Simone Stolzoff makes the case that having uncertainty isn't the problem, and the surprising power of not knowing may be the solution. And in recognition of Survive Stroke Week, Dr. Blaise Baxter breaks down the critical warning signs of stroke, because knowing them could save a life. Again, all of that's coming up on The Mountain Life right after the local news hour at 9 a.m. Taking a look at some local news now, Utah ski industry leaders don't think erratic weather patterns will doom their business. Still, state leaders are planning for alternatives to winter tourism. KPCW's Connor Thomas has more.
Utah is expected to see more extremely snowy and extremely dry years and fewer quote-unquote normal years as the global average temperature increases. Local skiers and riders might complain after a record low like last winter, but Ski Utah president and CEO Nathan Rafferty says tourists don't always feel the same way. He points out they're frequently trading views of highways, rooftops, or skyscrapers for the Wasatch Range.
I know I talked to a bunch of resorts that had some of their best NPS scores ever, which is kind of a measure of how people felt when they were at the ski areas, and I think they really felt like the staff at these ski areas were making the best of what was happening.
National Ability Center CEO Willie Ford agrees. The two are part of a winter tourism panel at Monday's annual Wasatch Back Economic Summit. Despite the scientific consensus that humans collectively are accelerating climate change, Ford says he can't control the weather.
Two questions you have to ask yourself. What things do we actually have control over? And the things that we do have control over, which can we make better for our customer?
Ford says inconsistent weather doesn't mean he can't provide a great experience for the athletes with disabilities his organization serves. The NAC has summer programming in both Park City and Moab. An estimated two-thirds of Summit County's sales tax dollars come from visitors, and Utah isn't giving up on winter sports since the Olympic Games are returning in 2034. Still, state leaders are thinking about other sources of revenue. Governor's Office of Economic Opportunity Deputy Commissioner Natalie Randall says that's based on feedback from recent tourist surveys.
And what visitors were saying is, yeah, we're still coming, we're still experiencing the ski product, we are still doing those items, but we also are having to find other opportunities too.
The Park City Chamber of Commerce and Visitors Bureau took short-term measures this past winter to help guests enjoy the mountains without the snow. Randall says the state is focused on three types of activities in the long term: agritourism, astro-tourism, and film tourism. This year's Wasatch Back Economic Summit had an entire panel discussion about agritourism, featuring the founders of Heber Valley Artisan Cheese, Three Springs Land and Livestock, and Ballerina Farm. Brendan Coyle, a winemaker at Dendrick Estate near Camas, says there's no better way for farming to survive in such close proximity to the ski resorts.
When you're just doing traditional agriculture and traditional ranching on land that has that high of value, the pressures are massive, absolutely. But that's when value-added agriculture and agritourism can really shine.
That's because his customers overlap with Vail's and Alterra's. By astro-tourism, Randall means making the night sky an attraction in itself through dark sky certifications and lighting regulations. And even without the Sundance Film Festival, Utah tourism leaders are trading on more than 100 years of iconic film history to draw visitors. The state advertises the Utah Film Trail, where cinephiles can see where their favorite Western, sci-fi, or teen flick was made. Park City's arts organizers hope to fill that Sundance-sized hole with local programming, too. Visitors spend $13 billion in Utah every year, according to Randall. And Rafferty and Ford, they're hopeful that skiing remains a part of that.
At the end of the day, you're just not in the ski industry if you're not an optimist.
Rafferty adds that early data points to a better winter next year. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
Coming up Tuesday, May 26, is a meeting of the Intergenerational Book Club between the Park City High School Student Book Club and those 60 and older. In the studio with details are Book Club President Rachel Riff, along with the Executive Director of the Park City Senior Center, Tracy Dixon. Good morning. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Leslie.
Thank you.
Rachel, maybe start with you. What first is the Intergenerational Book Club? And is it something you came up with?
Yeah, so this is something that I came up with, and this will be the first time we meet. Hopefully, it will become a regular thing, but we want to basically meet with our senior citizens and discuss books. And I got the idea from it through actually our book club fundraiser that we had at the high school back in March. We invited community members to come and talk books, and a lot of people that came were older folk, and it was so much fun to discuss books with them and see all the different perspectives. And so we really want to focus on that in our intergenerational book club.
Yeah, so you're also with the Park City High School Student Book Club, and mm-hmm. so there's a separate organization for that?
Yes, and I started that last year because this is the first year in nearly a decade that we've had a library at the high school, which is crazy to me, and so I wanted to create a nice, fun, engaging space for books because we do read an English class, and it is great, but there's only so much fun you can have with, you know, Lord of the Flies.
Yeah. So, again, you guys haven't done this before. This will be a first gathering. I mean, what are you expecting?
So we have about half a dozen students signed up so far. And so we're going to, you know, head on over to the Senior Center, our book club, and that's be after school. We got to be careful of finals and stuff. And we're going to meet with seniors. We're going to talk. We're going to go through. And the way that we normally do it at the high school is we'll meet. We'll kind of introduce the book, you know, a little recap of what we read this month. And then we'll break off into smaller groups to discuss it. And I think it'll be probably about the same with the senior centers.
Okay. So, Tracy, you agreed to host it here at the senior center?
Yes, indeed. Quite honestly, they did all the heavy lifting. Yeah. I just said yes.
Okay. So it's Tuesday, May 26th, after school, starting at about 3 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
And anybody 60 and older? who is a member of the Senior Center?
Anyone who is a member of the Park City Senior Center is more than welcome to join. Absolutely.
Yeah. Do you have some interest from the Senior Center?
We sure do. Yes, absolutely. The word is spreading. We, just like the high school, we have about 6 people that have signed up already. The number is only growing. I know we're going to have a good turnout.
How did you decide what book to read and what book are you reading?
We are going to be reading and discussing Remarkably Bright Creatures by Shelby Van Pelt, and we chose this book for a couple different reasons. The main relationship in the book is between a 70-year-old and a 30-year-old, and it's an incredible intergenerational relationship. And we wanted to kind of mimic that perspective, and we thought that would be great to do. And other themes in the book include grief, family, the hardness of life, and it's such a good book. And also, the movie's coming out, and we're hoping on having, you know, a watch party at the high school for our book club.
Trayson, what do you know about seniors? Have many read the book already, or?
I've actually been asking at lunch every day, and every day I'm shocked how many people have already read the book. Absolutely. It seems to be a very popular book, especially among the demographic that we're serving.
Yeah, and I noticed that you're carrying it around, so you're in the midst of it as well?
Yes, indeed. Yeah, we have copies, actually, at our senior center, so if anyone out there needs one, come see me.
Rachel, do you hope that this continues, or is it just a one-time deal?
Yeah, we're going to focus on seeing how this one goes, but for future, I know that at the high school, we would love to have this become a regular thing.
Yeah, and what do you see in the value between the youth of Park City High School and our 60-year-olds plus?
I find that talking about books of people in other generations, other stages of life, just brings so much more meaning to a book and so much more perspective, because instead of seeing just the way that you interpret it, you can really see with other people and high schoolers, with other, you know, peers your age. It certainly does widen your perspective, but being able to do it in such a different stage of life is so incredible.
Do you plan to continue this summer, or would you wait until next school year?
We'd probably wait until next school year, just because that's when it's easiest for us. A lot of our members will, you know, have jobs, they'll be taking classes, they'll be going on vacations over the summer, and so we're probably going to wait.
Yeah. And if you were to think of another book maybe for next year, I mean, any ideas at this point?
Ooh, I don't think so.
That's a good question right there, huh?
Certainly something to think about, yeah.
And what are some of the books that your book club has read at the high school?
We have read, I think this will be our 6th this year, we read Aristotle and Dante, Discover the Secrets of the Universe. That's a great book. We read Project Hail Mary. That was a lot of fun. And through that, we were actually able to bring in a NASA Boeing fuel scientist, Dan Campbell. And then after that, we actually went out and we saw the movie together. It was a lot of fun.
Again, everyone's invited to show up Tuesday, May 26th at the first intergenerational book club between Park City High School students and those 60 and older members of the Senior Center. Anything else you wanted to add?
Well, I just want to say, I think this is such a great opportunity, and, you know, it's incredible what, you know, the folks from the high school have been able to put together, and their enthusiasm is incredibly heartwarming. And so many of our members at the Senior Center are just ecstatic about this new program that we're putting on, being able to invite younger folks. You know, so often we get kind of isolated among people within our own age range, and then you no longer get the perspectives of other generations. So I think we're trying to kind of bridge a gap here with younger generations, you know, bring in outside perspectives and really just bring in the opportunity to have fun, learn from one another. It's going to be exciting. I'm really looking forward to it.
Well, I think it's just a lovely idea. Congratulations on coming up with such a great idea, and I hope it gets to continue.
Thank you.
Okay, Rachel Riff and Trayson Dixon, thanks for your time this morning.
Thanks so much, Leslie.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. Well, a Summit County woman has died after the climber was caught in an avalanche Monday on Mount Makalu in Nepal. CBS News reports 53-year-old France's resident Shelley Johansson was descending from the summit of the fifth highest peak in the world when she and three others were caught in the slide. She was climbing with her partner David Ashley and two Nepali guides. Ashley and one guide were injured and flown to a Kathmandu hospital along with Johansson's body. The other guide shared his account of the avalanche with Explorers Web, saying that no one was buried in the slide below Camp 3. On a Facebook post May 5th, Johansson said that the team had been stuck at Makalu's base camp waiting for the right weather and planned to start the climb to Camp 2 on May 6th. Live tracking data from Ashley and Johansson shows they summited the nearly 28,000-foot mountain on May 8th. Johansson and Ashley ran the Camas-based Dash Adventures, which partners with locally owned and operated guide companies for trek and climbing expeditions. In a Facebook post on the company's page, Ashley said that Johansson died in his arms on the mountain from injuries sustained in the avalanche, nearly 24,000 feet up the mountain. Johansson is the fourth climber to die in the Himalayas so far this season. Well, with their mother scheduled to be sentenced in court this morning, the children of convicted killer Corey Richens want her to spend the rest of her life in prison. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports that's what the three boys said in victim statements to prosecutors.
Corey Richens' three sons say they won't feel safe if their mom, who killed their father in 2022, is free. The children's statements are included in court papers that Summit County prosecutors filed ahead of Wednesday's sentencing hearing. The couple's oldest son, now 13, told prosecutors he's afraid Corey Richens, quote, will come after me and my brothers, my whole family. His brothers expressed similar concerns in the state's sentencing memo. In March, a jury convicted the Camas area mother of fatally poisoning her husband, Eric Richens, the night of March 3rd, 2022. Corey Richens had argued she couldn't have killed him because she was asleep with their middle child. Prosecutors say the boy told them that's false. Court papers say he was instead put to bed early without a bath, but later tried to get into his parents' bedroom, which was locked with the TV playing loudly. Corey Richens allegedly yelled at him to go away. The aggravated murder conviction carries a punishment of 25 years to life in prison or life in prison without parole. Prosecutors are asking 3rd District Judge Richard Mrazek to sentence her to the latter, citing in part the concerns of her kids. Richens' attorneys are expected to ask for a chance at early release if the Utah Board of Pardons and Parole allows it. Mrazek will also sentence Richens on 4 other felonies Wednesday, those being attempted aggravated murder, 2 counts of insurance fraud, and forgery. Those carry sentences ranging from 1 to 5 years to 5 years to life in prison. Prosecutors want Corey Richens to serve those sentences consecutively, meaning she can't serve time for 2 crimes at once. They're also asking Mrazek to order her to pay back the $1.4 million in life insurance she collected and to reimburse Summit County $1.4 million for the cost of the trial. Prosecutors also say Richens' use of poison is particularly heinous. Evidence presented at trial showed she used up to 5 times the lethal amount of fentanyl to kill her husband. Finally, they say Corey Richens' character is, quote, irredeemable. Following the guilty verdict 2 months ago, prosecutors say Richens texted an unidentified admirer that she would, quote, expose the county, its prosecutors, Judge Mrazek, Eric Richens' family, and the investigation as a whole. Prosecutors decided not to seek the death penalty in the aggravated murder case about 3 years ago. Sentencing is scheduled to begin at 9:30 a.m. on Wednesday, May 13th. It would have been Eric Richens' 44th birthday. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
For the first time, the Rocky Mountain Lift Association will be hosting its annual conference outside of Colorado, and it's coming to Utah next week. In the studio with details, I have Jeff Marska. He is past president of the association. He also serves as Deer Valley's Lift Operations Field Manager. Good morning, Jeff. Thanks for being here.
Good morning, Leslie. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so maybe start by telling us what is the Rocky Mountain Lift Association and what role does it play in the ski industry?
Well, the Rocky Mountain Lift Association started in 1971 as the Rocky Mountain Lift Maintenance Association. And they felt in 1976 that was kind of too specific and wanted to branch out to ensure that all aspects of lift operations and maintenance and electrical was represented for the organization. So it became RMLA, which is Rocky Mountain Lift Association. And ever since then, it's been an organization based on continuous education of our lift maintenance, lift electrical, and lift operational folks, and ensuring that they have the kind of a platform to be able to come together, share best practices, and making sure that, you know, our lifts are, you know, as safe as they can be, as efficient as they can be, as friendly as they can be, and also just empowering for our men and women of the lift industry.
Yeah, so it's Rocky Mountain, but do you have people coming from across the country, internationally?
Exactly, yeah. Again, the organization was set up based in Colorado, and it was a Colorado-only organization for many years. And in 2011 and 12, somewhere in there, they changed the bylaws to kind of expand that because of the fact that we were getting more and more individuals from outside of the state of Colorado, me being one of them. And they end up seeing people from all over the United States, Canada. We do get some representation from Australia and other places as well. Anywhere that has a ski lift will probably attend one of our conferences.
So is this going to be held in Salt Lake or here in Park City?
It's going to be held in Salt Lake at the Salt Palace. For many years, probably over 20 years now, it's been held in Grand Junction, Colorado, because, again, being a Colorado-based organization, you know, it's like turning a barge, trying to get a lot of those folks to be willing and interested in wanting to go outside. But because of the space that we had there, it was a great venue. It was just the size and for the magnitude of what we see coming each year to participate. We would have, you know, people out in hallways and, you know, on floors, and we're like, you know, if you want to have a good educational experience, you need to go bigger. So we looked around, found the Salt Palace down in Salt Lake, so we are going to be there. But one of the things that we also provide prior to the conference is what we call our special class day. That is an all-day training program in a variety of different aspects of lifts, and we're excited that Deer Valley is actually hosting what they call a lift safety boot camp, and we will have probably 25-ish individuals coming on Monday to go through a lift safety boot camp with Mike Lane with NSAA, and it will be awesome to showcase Park City and Deer Valley.
Yeah, so what lifts are you going to turn on?
Well, I don't know if we're going to turn any on, using it as kind of, an outdoor scenery and stuff, but it's going to be down in Snow Park. Mm-hmm. So down at Snow Park, you have Carpenter, Silver Lake Express, and Snowflake that he gets to choose from, and not knowing where Mike wants to direct the gang, we'll see which one he goes to.
Yeah, so how did you kind of wrestle the conference away from Colorado? I mean, did you just put a bid together? And
We ended up reaching out to a variety of different cities, Denver, Las Vegas, and Salt Lake. And this conversation started probably around when I was president of the board, which is around 2017. And like I said, with it being a Colorado-based, there was a lot of reluctancy and stuff. But again, the fact that we are seeing 600 to 800 people any given time, we want to make sure that we offer enough space for them to participate. And Salt Palace came back and said, here, you have plenty of space for many, many people.
And as you mentioned, safety is critical in
very
lift operations.
So.
I mean, what are some of the biggest safety priorities that ski resorts are focused on at this point?
It's a variety of things. I mean, everything, you know, traveling on lifts is the most safest mode of transportation. And you want to make sure that you maintain that. And what's really awesome is with RMLA being able to share best practices and have vendors, Doppelmayr, Leitner Palma, Skytrack, Sunkid. I mean, there's a variety of different lift manufacturers and people that make carpets. You want to make sure that, everyone is trained to keep up on the technology that's constantly advancing. And in making sure, especially our newer maintenance individuals and operational people have that ability to learn pretty quickly with a group of experienced folks. Again, to making sure that they're up to speed and knowledgeable about everything mechanically wise, operationally wise, and you want to make sure that they know what they're doing.
Yeah, well, and again, this is a half a world away, but we all saw that gondola kind of crash down the mountain in the Swiss Alps in March.
Yeah.
Do we know what happened there? I mean, how does a gondola car fall off a cable?
I think it's pretty early to really know. Things like that we do discuss and ensure that as much knowledge about incidents is known by the group. For incidents like that, it's pretty early to tell what could have possibly happened there.
Yeah. I guess how much training goes into preparing lift operators and maintenance crews before a ski season kicks off?
Quite a bit. I mean, if you could imagine, as much as they need to know. Again, there's a lot of OJT, on-job training, that goes on. They use a lot of the summer period to help bring up newer mechanics, electricians, and operational people. For your typical operator, I mean, you're looking at least 40 to 80 hours of experience, and that's not, I mean, we're talking classroom, we're talking on-the-job shadowing. They have a lot of opportunities for them to get up to speed and learn. There's a lot of reviews, a lot of competency tests and stuff that they show or demonstrate. And again, this RMLA is a great opportunity for everybody to come together and share what best practices or the best way of going about that is.
Yeah. And I know you spent many years at Park City Mountain before moving on to Deer Valley, but how long does a lift last? And I'm thinking about the Jupiter chairlift at Park City, right? Where, I mean, it's been the same chairlift as the 45 years I've skied here. But I mean, the chairs may be the same, but like what, the cable gets replaced or what
happens?
Yeah,
all the components that wear obviously do get replaced. Chairs can last a very long time. I mean, they're very well taken care of. I mean, whether it's Park City, Deer Valley, they have some longevity. And again, though, how many times do you see a 1994 Chevy Impala driving around the town? You don't see that very often. So, they do have their life expectancies and their usage and over time. But again, they're very well taken care of and can last quite a long time.
Yeah, and I mean, I just think of kind of the more automation and kind of advanced systems that we're seeing becoming part of modern lift operations. And a good example is are the lifts that were built there at Deer Valley's East Village, right? Where it's fully automatic. All you have to do is sit down.
Pretty much, yeah. It's pretty impressive on the technology that's coming out. A lot of that stuff is driven in Europe. Doppelmayr and Leitner-Palmer are based out of Europe, so a lot of that technology definitely comes out of there and comes over to the U.S. In various ways, as you see, going from the 10-passenger gondolas at both Park City and Deer Valley to the 8-packs, the 6-packs, bubbles, automatic restraining bars. There's a lot of bells and whistles that are installed on these lifts. I mean, the amount of redundancy is incredible, just again, to elevate that level of safety for our guests and passengers riding those chairlifts.
Yeah, so today, I think at the very minimum, all lifts have to have just a safety bar on them.
Yes, they all will come with a comfort bar, restraining bar, safety bar, a bar, footrest, whatever you want to call it. And the big thing that we try to push is just for people to use them. There are some lifts that are automatic, but just encourage people to use the bars. And again, it's just another level that is great to have for, especially if you're riding with children. But I think everybody should be at least using the bar.
Yeah. So when we think about our just our normal everyday lifties, I mean, it's just like they help people get on and off chairlifts. But I mean, is there a lot more to it?
There is a lot to it. I mean, again, we all have to make sure that we all understand it's personal responsibility of getting on a chairlift. You know, a lift operator is there just to make sure they're, observing and assessing the situation and stuff. But, that's one of their main goals, is just to making sure that, you know, they're monitoring, watching that loading and unloading process. And, but it takes a village. I mean, everyone that gets on those chairlifts needs to remember, you need to have that understanding and experience to be able to load and unload yourself safely, and then a lift operator's there just as a backup.
Yeah, but we still want to see those Warren Miller reels forever and ever.
Yes, those are classics.
Okay, anything else, Jeff, you wanted to tell us?
No, like I said, okay. It's just thanks for having us. It's great to get this message out, especially to this community that, there's a lot of organizations out there that are, geared around lift operations, lift maintenance, lift electrical. There's a program that there've been that just started for an apprenticeship program for lift maintenance people through the Salt Lake Community College, which has been pretty exciting to see. Helping those people that are in the industry to get better. And then also, this is the graduation period of the town, and it's nice for those kids to really know that, there is a future in the ski lift industry, and you can get that kind of training and technical understanding that you can make a lifelong career, because I've worked with people for 36 years now that have been in industry and have loved it and raised families and have done a great job. So that's what this is all about, is just trying to get that message out that RMLA is here to support that, and we're in the community, and it's exciting to see them here.
Yeah, I mean, you think about it, I mean, these are as important as like the airline mechanics, right?
Very much so, yeah. Yes. It's awesome.
I was going to say, it's got to be a tough job, though, because if something not working, I mean, it's 24/7.
It is. I mean, over the years, I mean, you see those men and women that fix these lifts out in all hours of the night. I mean, if you have a lift breakdown, it's not like everybody goes home at 5 o'clock and, well, we'll deal with it tomorrow. They're literally there until the job is done. And sometimes it could, unfortunately, take days because of, some of these parts and pieces that these lifts do take are coming from Europe or long distances. So it's not like people are sitting on their hands just letting it just sit there. There's a lot of scrambling and working that takes place that these people do, and it's long and tiring.
Yeah. Well, some of us may remember, I mean, it was months, I think, for the Prospector, or, I mean, the Payday lift, right, when something went down there.
Yeah, but again, sometimes, like I said, those things happen, and the lift maintenance team will do pretty much anything and everything to ensure that they get it back up and running, and it's running safely.
Okay, Jeff, appreciate your time this
Leslie,
morning.
Leslie, thanks so much.
Again, that's Jeff Marska. He is with the Rocky Mountain Lift Association and also serves as Deer Valley's lift operations field manager. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. The Federal Environmental Protection Agency is working on plans to clean up mine tailings in the Richardson Flat area. KPCW's Christine Waller reports that locals and developers gave some feedback at an open house on Monday.
More than 40 years after mining activity ended in the Park City area, Richardson Flat is still storing toxic soils with heavy metals like lead and arsenic. Now, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency is laying out a plan for removing tailings. The waste material left after separating valuable minerals from ore that remain in the floodplain and are moving slowly downstream. At a public open house Monday, the EPA shared plans for the Richardson Flat tailings site with interested locals. The site spans from Prospector Square in Park City to Interstate 80 and has four unique sites called operable units. Unit 1 is the 258-acre Richardson Flat impoundment, which holds about 7 million tons of tailings. Cleanup is largely complete on this site, which also houses the Richardson Flat Park and Ride. Two more consist of about 6 miles of tailings deposited in Silver Creek and its floodplain, which runs from Prospector Park to I-80 and covers the rail trail. Unit 4 is the Prospector Drain, which collects the area's shallow groundwater and discharges it into a wetland. EPA Remedial Project Manager James Ho said cleaning up the entire site would cost over $70 million and is ineligible for federal funding. The EPA will pay for the remediation using money from negotiated agreements with so-called responsible parties, including United Park City Mines Company. To date, the agency has collected about $18 million.
One of the hard challenges is trying to figure out the best way to utilize that $18 million that provides the most benefit, you know, your best bang for your buck.
That's why the cleanup plan focuses on the Silver Creek floodplain, where simpler remediation tactics, like installing a 6-inch cap of clean soil over contaminants, aren't possible.
All the material is sitting within the floodplain, and so it's constantly saturated with water, and it's constantly leaching that metals content back out into the water. So just capping it in place wouldn't work. We need to physically isolate it from the water.
The current proposal would first remove tailings at Richardson Flat Road and move north as funding allows. After removal, Utah leaders and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service will work on restoration, including planting vegetation to prevent erosion. John Hall was one of roughly three dozen Park City area residents on hand as the EPA shared its plans for Richardson Flat. Hall said he's considering buying a home nearby and wanted to understand the health risks. He said he's been skiing in Park City for around 10 years and knew it used to be a mining town, but didn't fully understand the pollutive effects.
It's one thing to come up and, you know, enjoy a weekend of skiing, but you don't think about what the implications are in the rivers and the riparian areas and so forth.
After hearing from state and federal officials, he said he's not overly concerned. For the contaminated soil to impact public health, locals would need repeated exposure over years through breathing dust or eating dirt. Developers were also interested in hearing more on EPA's plans, including Cheryl DeMarco, an architect with DRE Group. She said she wanted to know what kind of development could be possible in the area.
I'd like to know how they're going to do it and make sure that it's done properly and so that developments could be put there. It'd be nice to have some open space too, though.
The goal is to have shovels in the ground by summer 2027. The public comment period for the plan is open through June 8th. Christine Weller, KPCW News.
Well, the annual Wasatch Back Economic Summit on Monday brought together regional leaders to discuss growth, tourism, transportation, and the changing economy. In the studio with a recap of that and a look ahead at some of the upcoming events in Heber City is the Executive Director of the Heber Valley Chamber, Dallin Kosher. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So what were the biggest takeaways for you from this year's Economic Summit?
For me, some of the on the planning side of it, I was really pleased at how it turned out. We had a great turnout of guests there today. On Monday, I think we tapped out about 375, 380, so that was pretty exciting for us to see it, the event continue to grow. I really appreciate the amount of people from both Wasatch and Summit counties. I think that split is getting more and more equal, so that we're seeing both communities coming to the event. I love that. And I love the planning efforts of both the Park City Chamber and our chamber coming together to make this a united event. I think the information, as all the feedback I've been hearing from people here and there, has been very positive. I feel like they got a lot of great information about things that they that are important to them and that are useful for moving forward. So I think those are some highlights that we are seeing going forward. And you know, I always love our economists who come speak, like Robert Spendlove or Natalie Gochner, who tell us, you know, some hard truths or some good truths. Like here's what's happening and here's what we need to be not afraid of, but aware of. And with awareness comes action and preparation. So I think that helps weather the storm. So I think I love all that stuff, so we know what's coming around the corner.
Yeah. Speaking of Natalie Gochner, she, again, the director of the Kemp C. Gardner Institute and was your breakfast keynote speaker. I mean, what was so interesting, you know, she was talking about the job growth slackening and, you know, and inflation rising and basically saying, you know, I guess they call it stagflation back in the day.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she's like, well, we would be in a recession if it wasn't for the very rich people continuing to buy stuff. I mean, she called it the haves and the have-yachts.
Yeah, the haves and have-yachts. That I used to describe a neighborhood I live in, Heber Valley, or Heber City, like, we got the haves and the have-mores. And so, yeah, that is true. And I thought that was fascinating. She talked about if it wasn't for this continued spending of people, even the wealthy and even down to the middle class, that we would be in this recession. And I think that's a positive thing that, or it's a remarkable thing, I should say. Like, how can this be happening? We keep spending. The consumer sentiment is down. It's still a little higher here in Utah than the rest of the nation, but it's still down. But yeah, we're still seeing people going on vacations. Yeah, and that was an interesting comment that, and we've seen that in the luxury market, that most properties in the hotel business are doing, that are luxury, are doing well, and it's the economy/family markets that are a little struggling. So what can we do to turn those tides and bring those people back is really interesting.
Yeah, and I guess how would you describe the current economic health of the Heber Valley and Wasatch County?
So I would describe it as stable, healthy and stable. Like I don't think it's, we're shooting the moon here, but I don't think we're regressing anything. We see the great things happening at Deer Valley East Village. One of the things I talked about in my breakout with Jeff Jones and Phil Dean from Kempsey Gardner was, we're seeing visitation in Heber Valley still climbing year over year each month. And which is really interesting and a positive thing for our community to say, okay, there's still people coming despite the construction going at Deer Valley East Village and the Homestead Resort. There are still folks coming to the Valley wanting to be a part of it. And that's a really key part of keeping the gears in our local economy lubed and moving forward. So I think that's a really important thing. So I wouldn't say, we're seeing transient room tax and sales tax growing, but not in double digits, but we're 6% over last year at this time, and on both those things. So it's okay, we're seeing some modest health right there. So I think that's good for us to keep monitoring those things.
All right. Did you get any response to kind of the restructuring of the summit where the outbreak sessions were focused on business, tourism, and workforce?
We will look forward to seeing the results from the survey that we had hopefully folks have taken. That was very helpful surveys. If you were in attendance, please fill out those surveys and let us know, because we try to really hard to make things, adjust our events based off those things. I actually really liked it, because I think it I think it's really confusing when you have breakouts that are all over the place. When you have these tracks, it makes it easier for you, I'm really interested in this track or this thing. So I think it made it really approachable for our guests.
All right. The 2034 Winter Olympics, also part of the conversation, yeah, as during the lunch panel. What opportunities do you see the games bringing to the Heber Valley?
One thing I thought was really fascinating from Natalie was the games are going to, she quoted Brad Wilson, who said the games are going to, can be used to make Utah better. And what is that going to look like? And I think about that in terms of Heber Valley. What can we do to make it better? That it's not just this huge impact that leaves this gaping hole in our community, but what can we do to become better? And I think this idea of transportation, that theme coming up a lot in all the conversations. But transportation and coordination and transit, we're seeing our growth in Heber Valley it's not slowing down. It's getting faster. So what can we do to remove cars from the streets, from even locals to visitors? I think that transit work, we've been working with High Valley Transit, has been fantastic. I think expansion of those partnerships, getting shuttle services and things like ongoing trolley system that goes through Midway, Heber, up to Deer Valley East Village, and kind of circulating a circular like that. I think all these things are really important that will help us. We have 7 years to perfect it, 2 weeks to master it, and then a lifetime to enjoy it. So I think those are some things that we need to, would be perfect for our community. Additionally, I think we will then have an opportunity to make our downtowns gathering places for us residents that then will then be perfect places for the guests of the Olympics to enjoy the community. I said in my topic that I learned that there's a similar number of people who come to the games without tickets as people who come with tickets. So, people are wanting to be part of this Olympic vibe. So if there's 15,000 people up at Soldier Hollow watching the event, does that mean there's another 5,000 to 10,000 people wanting to come be in Heber Valley and seeing what it's like there? So those are some things we need to understand. So how do we make these spaces that best amenable and comfortable for all of us? And I really look forward to those things being a positive legacy impact of our community.
Okay, well, before I move on to another topic, anything else you want to mention about that?
No, well, one of the things I would love to see happen, and hopefully we can make it happen, is that the Soldier Hollow Day Lodge, I would love to see that expanded to some sort of immersive experience like at Olympic Park. You know, there's this museum aspect to it where people can go, even if you're not going to do the luge and bobsled stuff, you have this really cool experience of, oh, this is what the Olympics were like. I would love to see more of that interpretive stuff happening up at Wasatch, at Soldier Hollow, and I think this is a good opportunity for us to make that happen.
Okay, so moving on, tell me a little bit about the Wasatch County Micro Grant.
Yeah, so we have received a grant from the state of Utah, from the Governor's Office of Economic Development, GOED, and it changed back. And we have about $90,000 that we're helping local businesses, and we had opened this up, and we're now into the review phase. We had 50 businesses apply, and it's a micro grant where it's up to $5,000. So we will pay up to 50% of your project, up to $5,000. So, for example, if you have a $2,500 project, we'll give you $1,250. If you have a $10,000 project, we'll give you $5,000. $5,000 is the cap. And so the idea is just to help the businesses clear the next hurdle. Like, I need some more signage, or I need a point of sale system that is really dragging, this current one's dragging us down. How do we get to that next level? And so the idea is just to, what's that next hurdle we can help these folks clear? So now we have a community advisory board who is helping us score those grants, and we look to make those announcements in the next week or so.
Oh, okay.
So it's really exciting, and it's our first time to be able to do this, and we look forward to doing it much more in the future.
Yeah, is that something you'll get? Is it an annual?
We will look to do it annually, because we get this grant from the state pretty regularly, and it'll be fun. It's our first time using this directly into the businesses. We used it for a lot of planning and other things of that nature, but now we want to get this money into the hands of the businesses to continue that economic engine.
Okay, Wasatch County's County Parks Master Plan Review is happening next week. And why is that important to the Chamber?
So it's important for us because I think, you know, we wanted to always tell our community what's happening in our community and be a voice and have an impact on it. So there are three or four parks that they are looking to get feedback on. And I think this is a neat thing for our community to actually have a voice in this. And some of those parks may have will definitely have a lot of local flair to it, but some of them might have some visitation opportunities with them. So we would love to hear feedback in on that. They'll be at the Wasatch County Rec Center in the classrooms on May the 19th, Tuesday, May 19th, so from 5 to 7 p.m. And we just want more feedback on that. Give us your thoughts and help us have these cool parks in our community.
Okay, in the last couple of minutes here, you got a couple of events, one tomorrow.
Yes, we have our chamber mixer at Spruce Personalized Decor in Midway. These are from 4 to 6 p.m. These are just fun events for people to come out and mix and mingle and have some food and have some drink and network. This will be... Spruce has always done a great job hosting this event, and you know, we have beautiful weather, so we'll be outside and enjoy the midway weather that we have out there. So please come out that. Anybody is welcome to attend to mix and mingle and network.
Okay, and then you also have your monthly chamber lunch coming up next week.
That's also on the 19th. That will be at the UVU Wasatch campus. We're doing a networking event where perfecting your elevator pitch, you know, just always your 30-second pitch. You're in the elevator with Ryan Smith from Qualtrics, and you want to ask him about an art center. What would you say? So those are some things that we're looking forward to having people come up, and I encourage people to register for the chamber luncheon and by Friday, and so we can get appropriate amount of food and be prepared for all of you.
All right, Dallin, anything else you want to mention?
I think that's great.
Okay, thanks so much.
Today. Thank you.
That's the Executive Director of the Heber Valley Chamber, Dallin Kosher. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW.